This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
the UN Refugee Agency says the recent outbreak of ethnic violence in Ituri province in northeastern Democratic Republic of Congo could presage a mass exodus of refugees and internal displacement.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting. Full details coming up.
Also, Zimbabwe opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai names Nelson Chamisa the acting president of the Movement for Democratic Change starting today. And South Africa's President Jacob Zuma held a second day of talks today with Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa, fueling speculation the embattled Zuma may resign.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story, the UN Refugee Agency says the recent outbreak of ethnic violence in Ituri province in northeastern DRC could presage a mass exodus of refugees and internal displacement. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The UN Refugee Agency says violent clashes between the Hema and Lendu ethnic groups in Ituri province have killed at least 30 people and caused more than 5,000 to flee their homes. UNHCR spokesman Babar Baloch tells VOA the conflict, which erupted 5 days ago, is not new to this region. He says growing tensions over land and grazing rights between the two groups has led to this latest flare-up.
This is return of violence almost after 2 decades, when in late 1990s around 400,000 people were displaced because of the tensions between of the two groups.
Tens of thousands of people were killed between 1999 and 2003. Since then, a low-level conflict has existed in Ituri, broken by occasional flare-ups. UNHCR monitors in the region say many villages in Ituri's Jugu territory have been burned to the ground. Baloch says thousands of people have become internally displaced, and he says nearly 1,400 refugees fled to Uganda in search of refuge earlier this week.
Now, UNHCR offices on both sides of the border are once more on high alert. We fear the fighting could spread to the neighboring areas, particularly because of the circulation of light weapons in the region.
Baloch says a majority of the refugees and internally displaced are women and children. He says access to some of the communities is limited. He says this is very worrying, as aid workers are unable to provide assistance to the displaced, who are in urgent need of food and other essential relief. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Zimbabwe opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai has named Nelson Chamisa the acting president of the Movement for Democratic Change starting today. The party said that Chamisa, one of three party vice presidents, will serve as president until Tsvangirai returns from receiving cancer treatment in neighboring South Africa. The party said the party's two other vice presidents also are in South Africa. The 65-year-old MDC leader has been in and out of the hospital since revealing last June that he has colon cancer. There are rumors that Tsvangirai is gravely ill and might not survive, but he has disputed the reports on his Twitter feed. He wrote, "Of course, I have cancer and not feeling too well, but I am stable and the process is under control."
Yesterday, we reported on the International Day of Zero Tolerance for Female Genital Mutilation. Religious authorities in the self-declared Republic of Somaliland have issued a fatwa banning the practice and vowed to punish violators. The VOA Somali service reports the fatwa by the Ministry of Religious Affairs allows victims of FGM to receive compensation. It did not say whether the compensation will be paid by the government or the people convicted for violating the ban. Somaliland Religious Affairs Minister Sheikh Khalil Abdullahi Ahmed Khaled says the fatwa effectively criminalizes the practice.
South African President Jacob Zuma held a second day of talks today with Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa, fueling speculation the embattled Zuma will resign. Ramaphosa, who in December replaced Zuma as the leader of the African National Congress, the country's ruling party, said the two leaders hope to finish their discussions and report to the nation in coming days. The 75-year-old Zuma, who has resisted calls from party leaders to step down, has governed the country for a tumultuous 9-year period that has been marked by economic decline and many allegations of corruption. The talks began after the ANC delayed an emergency meeting of its National Executive Committee, which has the authority to order Zuma to resign from today to February 17th. The postponement also increased speculation that an agreement for Zuma to step down was being finalized.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehi Suhib, 11 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. The UN says the recent outbreak of ethnic violence in the DRC could start a mass exodus of refugees and internal displacement. Zimbabwe opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai has named Nelson Chamisa the acting president of the Movement for Democratic Change starting today. And South African President Jacob Zuma held a second day of talks today with Deputy President Cyril Ramaphosa, fueling speculation the embattled Zuma will resign. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
The Egyptian prosecutor has referred to investigators a coalition of liberal and leftist politicians calling for the boycott of the presidential election scheduled for late March. The investigation is based on a case filed by an unknown lawyer accusing the coalition leaders of targeting the president, inciting against the state, and attempting to overthrow the government. Khalid Dawood, chairman of the Dastur Party, is among the accused leaders. He spoke with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawy about this turn of events.
The prosecutor general ordered an investigation into those allegations, which sound pretty absurd and bizarre to me because we're only practicing our political right to express our views within the constitution and within the law. We simply stated that we do not believe that there are elections that are going to take place in Egypt, that we're simply heading towards a referendum, and that the only candidate that's basically available for the Egyptian people is the current president, Abdel Fattah al-Sisi. So we're basically witnessing an extension of his four-year term without any serious competition from any other candidate. We are pretty surprised that the prosecutor general took such the serious charges that we're attempting a coup against the regime seriously and decided to investigate them, because we are legitimate political parties and we work within the framework of the law and the constitution, and there is nothing related at all to any attempt to overthrow the regime as the lawyer claimed in his allegations. So far they are allegations. No arrest warrants have been issued, and we haven't been even summoned for investigation, although this step is possible within the next few days.
Following the call to boycott the elections, Egyptian President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi warned that he would call for another mandate for the Egyptian people to fight evil people. What was the movement's response to that threat?
We issued a statement actually expressing surprise at such a statement made by President Sisi. Egypt is a country that's ruled by our constitution and many other laws, and there is no need of whatsoever to ask for a mandate. There is nothing in the constitution called asking the Egyptian people for a mandate, because the president and the other authorities have all the mandate they need within the framework of the law. And that's not something that we expect in a country that witnessed a great revolution like the January 25th revolution, which one of its key demands was to have multiple presidential elections, a president who can be held accountable, but to sort of, you know, portray the president as the only available option to maintain security and economic prosperity. I think this is an unfair bargain for the Egyptian people, who did not expect at all after the January 25th revolution to end up in such situations. So this kind of attitude of trying to tarnish the image of the opposition, claiming that we're simply politicians who are running after all our own interests, is part of the overall atmosphere that resulted in the fact that no presidential candidate basically wanted to run against the president. And even those who wanted to run were either forced to withdraw from the race or arrested.
A spokesperson for the president's campaign blamed the weak opposition for the lack of serious candidates against the President Sisi. What do you say to that?
Actually, yes, the political parties are weak, but that's because of the government's policies, which basically tightened any chance for freedom of speech. We are being prevented from communicating with the Egyptian people either through rallies or more important, through speaking to the Egyptian people through the media. All the media now is very tightly government-controlled. We as political parties, whenever we try to practice any sort of political activity, by expressing our points of view, our young people get arrested. They get sentenced to very long prison terms. And even for simple expression of opinion on social media such as Facebook or Twitter, ended up with some of our young people in prison with sentences of up to 5 years in jail. So with this kind of atmosphere, the constant attack against the opposition parties, I think these are all factors that led to the situation where we find ourselves in. I think it would be an asset for President Sisi if he built a democratic system that would enable the Egyptian people and Egypt as a country to continue on the path of fighting terrorism and economic prosperity without necessarily linking this to the character of the president himself.
That was Khalid Dawood, chairman of the Dastur Party in Egypt. He spoke from Cairo with VOA's Mohammed El-Shenawi.
Modern life is filled with televisions, mobile phones, and other electronics. Technology advances so quickly that many of these items are obsolete in just a few years after production, so they get replaced and the old ones discarded. VOA senior analyst Jeffrey Young reports parts of sub-Saharan Africa are being used as a dumping ground.
Their conveniences, their necessities, their status symbols, electronic goods such as TVs and phones. In with the new, out with the old. From the trash bins of Europe, North America, and other places, this ever-growing mountain of old electronics often winds up packed in containers shipped and dumped somewhere else, despite international bans on such disposal. The massive scope of the so-called e-waste problem is stated via Skype from Norway by Rehypto Norwegian Center analyst Christian Nelleman.
The global illegal trafficking in waste, electronic waste, is at least in the scale of 50 million tons annually. And considerable portions of this is dumped in West Africa.
While electronic waste dumping takes place across Africa, two nations, Nigeria and Ghana, are standouts. The United Nations Environment Program says Nigeria generates some 1.1 million tons of e-waste and Ghana about 180,000 tons per year. To get past bans, including the Basel and Bamako conventions, the presence of e-waste in shipments is often concealed, as discussed via Skype from Abidjan by the UNEP's Abdurrahman Bari.
People deliberately send e-waste using this mislabeling. Labeling it has some equipment, electric equipment, but still can be used, but it's not true.
At the Agbabolshi dump in Accra and its similar sub-Saharan African e-waste graveyards, workers dismantle everything from computers and televisions to refrigerators, largely by smashing and burning things to extract metal from wires and circuit boards. Much of this work is done by young people, even children, and it's quite dangerous, according to the UNEP's Bari.
And doing so, they generate toxic chemicals like furans, dioxins, and they are directly exposed because they don't use any protective equipment.
These e-waste poisons not only saturate dump sites and the air above them, but when it rains, hazardous chemicals are washed both into the soil and eventually into nearby waters where they can enter the food chain and remain for years. Ghana has announced that it wants to establish recycling centers where things such as old electronics can be more cleanly and safely handled, Along with health incentives, these facilities have the technology to recover more of what is valuable, such as the gold plating on connectors and silver solder. Electronics manufacturing needs to be a closed cycle, according to an official at NGO Greenpeace, Elizabeth Jardin.
And it's also important for the companies that make these products to take responsibility for them at end of life and educate consumers about returning these products, incentivizing them to return the products so that they can handle them.
Ms. Jardine says Apple is one corporation that is moving in that direction. But until this closed cycle becomes the norm, sub-Saharan Africa will continue to drown in e-waste. Jeffrey Young, VOA News.
Researchers say climate change is responsible for the vast majority of green sea turtles in the northern Great Barrier Reef off Australia being female. The scientists from the U.S. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration say the temperature at which turtle eggs incubate determines the sex of hatchlings and warn that warmer conditions are creating a dangerous gender imbalance. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Almost the entire green turtle population in parts of the northern Great Barrier Reef in Australia is now female. A study of about 200,000 animals in the reef's northern waters found them to be overwhelmingly female. The research was published in the journal Current Biology. There are concerns that the future of the endangered reptile is increasingly precarious. In the southern barrier reef, where conditions are cooler, about two-thirds are female. Researchers say that while they hope for some milder years to produce more males, they expect temperatures to continue to rise. One possible solution to the gender imbalance is to put up tents over beaches where turtles nest to give them shade. Dr. Colin Limpus, Queensland chief scientist, says that cloud seeding is another option.
There is consideration being given to having artificial rain. It's being considered primarily for how can we get the turtles nesting successfully. At the same time, it's going to cool the sand and should shift the sex ratio towards an increase in males.
The green turtle is one of the largest sea turtles and the only herbivore among the different species. They're named for the greenish colour of their cartilage and fat, not their shells. They're classified as endangered and are threatened by habitat loss, over-harvesting of their eggs and the hunting of adults. The Great Barrier Reef stretches for 2,300 kilometres down Australia's northeast coast. It's home to a spectacular range of wildlife, including more than 130 species of sharks, 500 types of worms, and 1,600 varieties of fish. The reef faces a range of threats, from the runoff of pesticides and soils from farms and warmer ocean temperatures that have caused the mass bleaching of the coral in the past 2 years. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
As Turkey continues its offensive on Kurdish-held areas in Syria, the international community is concerned about the growing number of casualties in the protracted war. Millions of people have been displaced during the seven-year-long Syrian conflict. More than 4 million of them live in refugee camps in the neighboring countries. German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier and U.S. actress Angelina Jolie, who is the United Nations Refugee Agency's special envoy, recently visited Syrian refugees in Jordan, raising awareness of the need for a political solution in their homeland. VOA's Zlatika Hoek reports.
Refugees crowded around Angelina Jolie during her fifth visit to Za'atari camp in Jordan's desert, less than an hour's drive from the Syrian border. The actress, who serves as special envoy for the United Nations Refugee Agency, addressed camp residents in a muddy patch among tents and caravans that have been the only homes some Syrian children have ever known.
It is heartbreaking to return to Jordan and witness the levels of hardship and trauma among the Syrian refugees as this war enters its eighth year.
Jolie called for a political solution for Syria's conflict, saying that humanitarian aid is not a long-term answer.
So I would urge the Security Council members to come to the region to visit the camps and the urban refugees and find a way to finally bring the full weight of the UN and the international community to bear to solve the conflict.
Jordan hosts about 660,000 registered Syrian refugees, but it is believed that there are as many unregistered ones. Some of them live in the Za'atari camp, but others have been placed in communities across Jordan. During the first day of his visit, German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier praised Jordan for its efforts in accommodating refugees.
I enjoy coming back because this is also an opportunity to honor the accomplishments of this country, which decades ago accepted many Palestinian refugees, many Iraqi refugees after 2003, and in the years since 2011, hundreds of thousands of refugees from Syria.
Steinmeier said Jordan, a country of 10 million people, needed help to bear the burden of accommodating refugees. Germany increased its humanitarian and development aid to Jordan from about $600 million to about $740 million in 2017. U.S. aid to Jordan totals $1.3 billion for 2017. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Joe Gill, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, political tensions simmer in Kenya as opposition leader Raila Odinga takes a symbolic presidential oath of office as the people's president, despite warnings from the nation's attorney general, who called the mock swearing-in of Odinga an act of treason. An in-depth look at Kenya's political future on the next Straight Talk Africa at 18:30 UTC.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
That AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you.
Mobile, mobile, mobile,
African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.